People trust their eyes above all else, but most people see what they wish to see, or what they believe they should see, not what is really there. And this week's opening quote comes from Zoe Marriott. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Now, before I move on to other topics, as I've said over the last few weeks, the shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand is going to create ripples and reverberations that are going to be felt around the world. And we are very much witnessing these ripples and reverberations now. We've seen gun laws introduced in New Zealand almost immediately. We've seen massive amounts of internet restrictions and websites blocked in Australia. As I mentioned last week, we saw a man, Martin Selner, harassed and vilified in Europe and had travel restrictions put on him simply because he received a random donation. And continuing on around the world, we've just seen in the last week or so new laws introduced in the UK, whereby a person can receive 15 years jail time for viewing terrorist propaganda online. One may question what constitutes terrorist propaganda. Is it a podcast which speaks out against the government? I mean, they can use such a broad brush when painting these parameters that they define these new laws by that you just never know what terrorist propaganda is, folks. If it's propaganda of war and propaganda of violence, then under the new UK laws, I would suggest it's probably illegal to watch the BBC, as that seems to be one of the world's most foremost sources of war and terrorist propaganda anyway. So this is the sort of stuff we're seeing, folks. Of course, hot on the heels of it, we saw the arrest of Julian Assange, which I touched on at the end of the show last week. And whatever you think of Assange, whether you think he's a plant, whether you think he's a mouthpiece, whatever you think he is, it's the political agenda that this is supporting that is the important thing. You know, what we see with the arrest of Assange is basically an international criminalization of real journalism and a breakdown of all international treaties regarding asylum for whistleblowers. So it's a very, very significant move. You know, all the talk that we're hearing from politicians that, oh, it's not anything against journalism. What it's about is the fact that someone hacked this secure government database. It's not about that at all, folks. If the government is committing crimes, then everybody should hack the secure government databases. The government has no right to even hold its databases secure. Its databases should be transparent. The only reason they hold their databases secure is because they say they need them to be secure to prevent any acts of war from foreign countries. But it's not foreign countries, it's foreign governments, and they all work together as one big criminal gang. That is the crux of the whole biscuit, folks. You know, the purpose of government should be to serve the people, and in such a position, they don't need to keep secrets. They need to share what they're doing with the people so we can decide whether we want them to do the things that they're doing. And all this is about, this whole debacle that's been cooked up with Assange, is to make sure that nobody ever feels safe in exposing government crimes ever again. And really, even the mere fact that they need to do this just fully exposes them as being the cowards and criminals that they are, and how truly scared they really are of anyone blowing the whistle on them. But they always cook up these stories, folks, and say, oh, it's about the hacking of the database, when really it isn't. It's about what was revealed by that hacking. You know, it's the exposing of government crime that is the important part here. And if the government legislates that this crime cannot be exposed, then those people need to be removed from office and held accountable for their actions, because it's simply not what we employ government to do. But that's the way it needs to be looked at, folks. You've got to look at the arrest of Julian Assange not as a personal thing against Assange, but see it as a political move on the world stage and how it's going to affect the world on that stage. That's how all these things need to be looked at. You've got to put it on the world perspective with everything else and see how it plays in and how all the pieces of the puzzle connect together to see what sort of a picture is really being formed. And it's important to do that with all of these events, folks. I mean, you've got to look at them separately as standalone events, certainly, but you've also got to see how they are connected in the grander scheme of things. And again, all of these new changes that we're seeing are riding on the back of the shooting that just recently happened in Christchurch, New Zealand. And some more information actually regarding that shooting has come to light, because one of the most important things regarding the Christchurch shooting is what is revealed to us by the shooter's video. This is something that I've gone through many times lately. The fact that the shooter's video reveals that there was a man in red, maybe even two men in red, who were working with the shooter, helping him coordinate events at the Al Noor Mosque while the shooting was going on. And one of the most crucial parts of the whole thing is the fact that there was a car parked at the front of the building that left halfway through the shooting while it was in full view of the shooter. And the most significant thing about it is that that car is easily identifiable as a silver Toyota Will VS, registration number FQH875. And what is significant about it is that that car was also spotted later that day in a random news report that showed up on YouTube. There's a report that showed up of one of the survivors of the Al Noor Mosque being interviewed, the man who apparently climbed out the window halfway through the shooting that we can see crawling across one wall and then he disappears out a window. That man is being interviewed on CNN or Fox or somebody, some American news service, I'm not sure who. But just during the news report, during the interview with him, they just switched to a random shot of the traffic, and lo and behold, there is that same silver Toyota Will VS, registration FQH875, driving through a police blockade. On the same day, same car, right there on the news report, and I think it's very important that we find out who is in this car and what this car's involvement in the shooting was. And I did put out speculation a week or two ago that this may have been the car that was taken from the second mosque, but I've since confirmed that it's not the same car. It looked a little bit the same, but it's actually a different car. But this car that I'm talking about is still at large somewhere, and whoever is in this car obviously knows a great deal about what happened at the Al Noor Mosque on March 15th of this year. And so I think that is an avenue that people definitely need to explore, and the people of New Zealand definitely need to make some noise about and get their government to explain what is going on with this car and why the claim of a single shooter was made to begin with and why the government has used that claim to subsequently remove their firearms from them, which they appear to have done under false pretenses simply because the story they've given to the public is an outright lie, as is well evidenced by the shooter's own video. And that's why the video is banned, folks. That's what I've been putting out there to people, and I just wanted to share that with you, that this car has again been spotted on a news report. We have the model of the car, we have the rego of the car, we can even get a glimpse of someone sitting in the passenger seat. So perhaps that's something that the people of New Zealand might want to pursue and explore a little bit further. And again, folks, in any investigation of the Christchurch shooting, these are the points people should be looking at. These are the most important points of the video, because these are points that are not open for speculation or conjecture or debate. They're simply evidence that is revealed very clearly by the video that is not up for dispute. It's simply there. And a lot of the other points that people are trying to get you to focus on are things that you can argue back and forth until the end of time. You'll never know the answer and you'll never be any wiser. It's just going to depend on what your opinion is, because the reality is that you simply weren't there. I mean, I wasn't there. We don't know. All we've got to go on is what we can discern as fact from the video. And it's important that they are facts, folks, and not things that require speculation or conjecture, not things that are up for debate, just clear evidence. And there is a lot of clear evidence on the video that the government of New Zealand are lying through their teeth. And so that's where we need to put some focus. We really do, because if we put some focus there, we can circumvent this whole thing that has been rolled out on the back of this event. We really can. I mean, it's important. It's crucially important, because they blew things so badly when they allowed this video to go out there in the first place. Whether it was meant to be streamed or whether it wasn't or however it went down, I haven't even made my mind up about that. It's difficult to know either way, but even arguing about that, it's not important. What is important is, as I said, the non-negotiable, non-debatable, non-disputable facts that are actually clearly revealed by the shooter's video. Get some focus on that and we'll bring this whole nightmare down, crumbling from its foundations all the way up to the top, folks. It's an opportunity for us. It really is. This video is a gift for us because of what it reveals, if we can clear away the smoke and noise. But anyway, I've focused on that quite enough lately. I think you get my drift on where my stance is on this issue and the importance of it. But again, we're going to see the reverberations of it continue. So you're probably going to hear me mention it again, because these reverberations are getting bigger and bigger and are rippling out more and more. And as I said, we're going to see them continue to do so. Now, I said back at the beginning of the year this was going to be an interesting year. We're going to see an event, and we're going to see some big changes this year, and we're certainly seeing them roll out pretty much as quick as they can muster. Another thing you've heard me talk about for a couple of years now, sort of ringing the warning bells about, is 5G and the smart cities, the smart system, the IoT, all the stuff that they're rolling out around us, the surveillance grid that they want to put in place as well. I've been informing you about the system they put in place in China, the social credit system, the mass surveillance that's going with it. And I've been suggesting to you that this is very likely a test case and a trial model that they intend to roll out around the rest of the world. Well, here in Australia, we have the city of Darwin in the Northern Territory. And Darwin Council has just announced that Darwin will be the first smart city in Australia. And it is moving towards a smart future based on the Chinese surveillance system that they put in place in their cities. The Chinese version of the smart cities is what they've already said. That's what they're doing. They're creating a system which will be able to track all of the residents of Darwin. And they're openly admitting this. This is what they're doing. And they're saying that the system will enable them to be able to put up virtual fences in Darwin. So what is a virtual fence would be the question. Do they talk about an active denial zone that people can't walk through because I'll get an electric shock walking between two posts? Well, I doubt that's what they're going to do. So what is the terminology? A virtual fence. Well, what does a fence do? A fence limits you from going places. It limits your access to things. So what they're talking about, folks, if you read between the lines, is a social credit system. This is the virtual fence they're talking about. If you step outside the lines and you get below social credit points, you will be limited from accessing certain areas. This is how they're doing it, folks. And of course, they're doing it in Darwin because it's a small enough city in Australia. It's kind of a capital city without being a capital city because the Northern Territory isn't really a state. And it's a small enough population, but a large enough infrastructure to kind of make it a very, very good trial model. It's also a very common port between Asia and China and Australia, so it's a good place for them to trial it out, and that appears to be what they're doing. So if you think it isn't coming to a town near you, folks, well, it is. And this is something that I've been talking about, like I said, for a couple of years now, and now we see it rolling out right here under our noses in Australia. So the government certainly is going hell for leather to get this control grid in place as quickly as they can, folks. And of course, this entire system that they want to put in place, because of the enormous amount of bandwidth it's going to use to have an IoT, to enable it to work properly, to have all of these transactions and digital things going on all at once, you need an enormous amount of bandwidth. So that's what they need 5G for. Well, that's one of the reasons they want 5G in place for anyway, and it's a weapons system, it's all sorts of things, but the thing is you cannot run a surveillance system as complex as the one they're putting in place and the IoT without something that provides the type of bandwidth that you're going to get from 5G. So it is essential for them to be able to put the 5G system in place in order for them to be able to roll out the IoT and the social credit system on top of it. But bearing that in mind, we're actually having a great deal of success in combating the rollout of 5G in some communities here in Australia. And that's a good thing as well, which is definitely going to put a spanner in the works of this surveillance system they want to roll out. But we need to get enough people involved in combating 5G in order to stop this happening. Because once it gets a foothold, I mean, if it gets a foothold in Darwin, it's going to roll out to the rest of the country anyway, unless we can completely stop the rollout of this 5G technology. And as I said, folks, we're actually having a little bit of success in doing this. Quite synchronistically, I went to a 5G meeting in the valley that I live in last weekend. And at that meeting, there was a barrister who came to the meeting. This guy's from Tasmania, and he's launched action in a town near here called Nimbin, and he's also launched action in Sydney. And he's stopped the rollout of 5G in all the actions that he's launched. And what he's doing is he's using the criminal code of each state and how the Australian criminal code defines assault, you know, what constitutes an assault under the criminal code of each state. And he's pointed out that an assault actually constitutes a threat against you that causes you to not be living your life in a state of quiet enjoyment. I mean, everybody is entitled to quiet enjoyment in the comfort of their own home. And if someone is threatening you or disturbing your quiet enjoyment in any way, then that constitutes an assault against you under the Queensland Criminal Code. Under the state criminal codes of pretty well all our states here in Australia. And you'll probably find it's the same in the United States as well. You'll find you've got a criminal code for your state, Arizona, California, wherever you happen to be. There'll be a criminal code for that state. Have a look at the criminal code and find out what constitutes an assault. And you'll find out that it is anything that disturbs the quiet enjoyment that you are allowed to live your life in the comfort of your own home. If you therefore go to a medical doctor and you get a medical doctor's opinion of what the damages are from exposure to electromagnetic radiation, and the medical doctor is able to confirm you that it is dangerous for human beings to be exposed to electromagnetic radiation, then you now have the ammunition you need to take to the telco company or to the local government representatives and inform them that there is an assault being carried out against your person because you are sitting in your house in a constant state of fear due to this electromagnetic tower and this electromagnetic bombardment that is being forced upon you against your will. This constitutes an assault under the criminal code of your state, and you demand that this assault against you be stopped immediately. And that's what we've done in Australia, and we've actually had an enormous amount of success taking this approach. And we're encouraging other communities to do the same. I'm actually going to try to get this barrister to come onto the show in the next couple of weeks so he can explain it to you properly without me messing up any details that I may be messing up. And just to attempt to explain the enormous simplicity of this approach to people, because it is so simple that it's actually quite beautiful in its simplicity. And when you really think about it, it makes perfect sense. And also, it's great in as much as it's using the criminal system, it's using the criminal code and the legal system against the people who are attempting to use the system against us. Now, they're attempting to tell us that we can't do anything about this 5G rollout because it's legislated that it will happen. Well, if that legislation is in breach of the criminal code, then that legislation is void and defunct by default. And if the politicians want to push that, you'll probably find that you can even prosecute them under breaches of the criminal code, because what they are doing, if they want to push the matter, you'll find that it's their own actions that is also constituting an assault against the people. And this is simply not permitted. It's not what you're allowed to do. You can't assault people. And that's what these telco companies are doing. That's what 5G is doing. And that's essentially what Trump is doing by forcing this rollout out as quickly as he is attempting to do in the United States. He is virtually assaulting all the people of his country with 5G technology. But you'll find that you do have a criminal code in whatever state you happen to be in, folks. And if you bring a medical doctor into it, as I said, and get them to outline damages of electromagnetic radiation, and you've just proved an assault against your person, and you just have acquired all the tools you need to take legal action against whatever telco company is rolling this stuff out. So that's something to think about. And as I said, folks, we're having an enormous amount of success with this in Australia, which means that everybody in Canada would also be able to do this, because this is the Westminster legal system, which would also mean that everybody in England will very likely find they can do the same thing. So if you're living in the UK and they're rolling out 5G in your neighbourhood, have a look at what the criminal code in the UK is, and then go and get yourself a medical certificate and start taking some action. And just inform these telco companies that if they don't cease and desist this assault against your person, you will press charges against them under the criminal code of your country. You know, and even thinking about how I just explained that to you, I'm sure that there'd be a way through this in pretty well every country on earth that isn't an open dictatorship. I mean, perhaps this isn't going to work if you're living in North Korea or something, but if you happen to be living in the United States or any country in Europe, I'm sure you have a basic criminal code which prevents assault against people in your country. And all you have to do, as I said, is look up and find what constitutes an assault. And you'll find that it doesn't necessarily need to be a physical assault. If you are not able to live your life in quiet enjoyment because of a threat that you perceive is being carried out against you, it's the same as having someone next door playing loud music 24 hours a day and you can't sleep or do anything. This is an assault against you. It's the same if you have an electromagnetic tower there, which is putting a frequency against you, which is causing harm. Now, the problem is that we get scientific reports and we get all of the scientific data and all the stuff the scientists say to point out the fact that this is dangerous, but there's no medical opinion involved in it. And scientists are not medical doctors, and what we're talking about is our threat to our health that's coming from these things. So if you get a medical opinion, then that far outweighs a scientific opinion when it is talking about the effects on human biology. So that gives you the tools you need to show that there is, in fact, an assault being waged against you. It's a constant assault, and it's something that you want rectified. And you're going to find that you've got a criminal code in pretty well every country on earth which will be effective in dealing with this issue, as long as you get a medical report and go about it in that way. So that's something that I think people should be looking at in all their countries. Just have a look at your criminal code, find out what constitutes an assault, and then go to a doctor and talk to them about the dangers of electromagnetic radiation and get them to write you out a report or an affidavit or whatever, a doctor's statement, identifying that these dangers are real. And as I said, that's pretty well all the ammunition you need to identify the fact that an assault is being carried out against you, and the government has no other option than to do something about that, and the telco company has no other option than to cease and desist the assault immediately. That's the thing, you see, folks. You know, no matter how negative they make it, no matter how much they try to hold us back, there's always a way out. There's always a doorway somewhere that we can squeeze open if we try hard enough. You know, and a lot of the beauty of this is that they're in such fear now, and they're rolling everything out so quickly that it's causing a lot of people to notice things. You know, people who wouldn't normally notice these types of things. Something that I noticed at the 5G meeting, or the 5G meeting that I went to in the Valley the other day, was the variety of people there. You know, there were hippies, there were housewives, there were farmers, there were barristers. There were all sorts of people from all sorts of walks of life, all there together, all sharing the same concerns and all sharing with each other and supporting each other in a common cause. And that was a beautiful thing to see. So there is a lot of the community coming together, and it's getting to the point that people's backs are getting to the wall. You know, a lot of the stuff that I've said for years, you know, people won't notice this until it comes to their own backyard. Well, 5G is kind of bringing it to their own backyard, because there's a lot of information being spread about this now. A lot of people have been putting out documentaries. A lot of people have been releasing information about this for a few years now, and it's getting to more and more people. You know, a lot of people have trouble with the vaccine issues or their belief systems about whatever, but 5G is one that really does seem to be reaching people, because a lot of people have fear of electromagnetism. A lot of people don't like the whole concept of the smart grid and the smart cities. I saw a great report the other day about how Alexa is sharing private conversations with people, you know, intimate conversations people are having in their home. Anybody can basically listen into these. Anybody at Microsoft can listen in, turn on anybody's Alexa and listen to what's being said in their homes. Big article on that in the news the other day, and people are getting onto this as well. They're realizing how invasive these things are, just how invasive all of this smart technology really is. You know, it's not smart for us to be using this technology. The technology itself is smart in as much as it's tracking every single thing people do. You know, your mobile phone, has a barometer in it as well. It can measure air pressure. You know, it knows when you get in a car. It knows when you exit the vehicle. It knows when it's horizontal, when it's traveling in a horizontal way. It knows when it's going up hills. It knows when it's going downstairs. If it knows the starting point that you start at on your journey and you take your phone with you, it can conceivably track your entire journey there and every person you interacted with along the way. It'll know when you got in and out of your vehicle. It'll know when you went into shops, what you bought in the shops, who you spoke to in the shops, everything you did. That's what these phones are doing, folks. These things are not your friends. These things are surveillance devices more than anything else. And not only that, they're removing us of our life skills. They are doing that in a terrible manner. Just the personal assistance and everything they do. I mean, I don't use a phone here in Australia at all. I just don't take one with me anywhere when I go out. And it's still kind of unnerving to see how many people are on these things everywhere you go. Everyone seems to have their nose buried in the screen all the time. And a lot of people don't realize what this is doing, you know, what this whole transfer of life skills into a virtual world means and what it's doing to us, what it's really doing to human consciousness, what it's doing to the whole human experience. And even what sort of an effect it's going to have on history is an interesting thing to look at as well. You know, when you look at this society, if you can see this society as being in a state of decline, a state of collapse, and in many ways I think it is. I don't know if there's going to be any way we can even pull ourselves out of that, as positive as I want to be about it. I just see it happening, and I don't know whether it's actually reversible. But when people look back on this time in history and they look for information about what happened, it's going to be very difficult for them to find any, because there weren't too many people who actually wrote anything down. We may have written it down on our keyboards and put it up there in the virtual world, but none of it was real. None of it exists in the real world. I mean, all the radio shows that I do, these only exist in the virtual world. They won't be there for people in the future to hear. Neither writings that I write will be around for people to read, because they only exist in the virtual world. All the films I make, none of this stuff is real. None of the stuff that we do online is actually here in the real world. And all the stuff we think we might be leaving behind for future generations, we're actually not. We're just putting it all into a virtual world. And the virtual world is basically taking this information from us, and it's putting us in a position where all they have to do is flick the power off, and suddenly everything we've created all disappears. And that's an interesting thing to look at. Now, we don't write scrolls or books or anything like that. Perhaps that's why the people in the old days used to actually carve things in stone, because they knew that was the only way it was going to be preserved. I mean, even if we wrote it down in books, how long are the books going to last anyway? It's an interesting way to look at the world. Now, when you really see how much we are having our life skills and our knowledge taken from us and transferred into a virtual world, it really does give one pause to question the motives behind all this and where we're really being led with all this. But anyway, I think we've reached break time here, ladies and gentlemen, so I'll leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, so just getting back to Christchurch for 1 minute, and I know you probably don't want me to, but getting back to it anyway. One of the claims that's being made in regard to the research I've been putting out is that I have photoshopped images. There's a lady called Mona Presley, I believe her name is, who's claiming that I have photoshopped images. I have a proposition for Mona Presley, or anybody who's talking to her. If you go to my website and scroll down to the headlines, you will find an article there called Max Egan on the Christchurch Shootings. If you scroll through that article, you will find a link to a 317 megabyte version of the shooter's video. And this version is actually hosted on a Dutch website, I believe, and it's the highest res version I can find. The link was sent to me by a listener. But go and have a look at that video. It's a 317 megabyte version. As I said, it does contain the audio dropout, but it is still the highest frame rate that I can find of this particular video. So go and have a look at that, and you can download that yourself, and please ask Mona and anybody else who is claiming I've photoshopped images to download that video and render it out frame by frame and show you the images they are referring to before the Photoshop manipulation they are claiming I've done had been applied, just so you can see the before and after shots of these frames they are claiming have been manipulated. That should be an interesting experiment for you folks, because what you're going to find is that they can't show you the before or after shot because there has been no manipulation applied. It seems to be the way these people do things. They just put blanket statements out there, make the claim, offer no evidence to support it, and then claim that anybody who doesn't support their view must be an operative. This is really how you can identify the actual operatives, folks. So, yeah, I just wanted to get that out of the way as well. A little bit of rain coming here, folks, so you might be in for a bit of background noise in the latter half of the show. Again, that's just what happens when you live in a tin shed, folks. You have to put up with this sort of stuff when you're trying to do radio. Or maybe not. Interesting stuff, Rain. Yeah, but that's a good idea, folks. I mean, if someone is claiming Photoshop manipulation, ask them to show you the frame they're referring to prior to the manipulation they are claiming has occurred had been applied. That's always a good thing. You know, people do this, as I said, they make the claim, but they don't offer any evidence to support the claim. So anyway, moving on. As I was mentioning before, all of the stuff that we're doing in the world today, all the stuff we're doing online, a lot of the activism, a lot of the stuff that we do in the world today doesn't actually exist in the real world. It just exists in the virtual world. Like I said, all of my films, all of my writings, all the stuff that I've done, that I've put out there, it's not real. None of it actually exists in the real world. It's just lines of code and electrical impulses in computer frames. And as I said, when people look back at this time in history, they will look at this as the age of screens, the age when nobody wrote anything down and all the information was lost. And when we look at things such as the manipulation of history that I've been looking at a great deal lately, looking at Tartaria, the fall of this great nation, whatever it was, this empire that once existed, the concept that they possibly had free energy. I mean, it seems very much evidenced by some of the stuff we're finding, but we look at this civilization and we see how wonderful and fantastic it was, and the incredible technology they had, the incredible art, and all the things they did. And many people will pose the question, why did they fall? How did they just get overrun so much? How did they suddenly disappear from history? What happened? If they had all this technology and they were so advanced, then how come we don't know anything about them? And again, I ask you, what will people know about this civilization when those who come after look back to find out what we did and what we were and how we fell into decline? Yeah, they won't know because we didn't write anything down. And really, what is destroying this civilization and what is creating this huge hole, this huge gap that is going to be there in the historical narrative for future generations? Because it is, folks, it's going to be a huge hole in history when people are trying to figure out this time. We look at that and we realize it's because of apathy. It's because we just thought we had it made. We just thought everything was great. We could do all this stuff in the virtual world, and all this virtual stuff that we do, we thought that it actually meant something. And you look at Tartaria and what it could have been, you know, the technology they had, and is that what happened to them? Did they simply not notice? Did they simply transfer all of their life skills into a computer realm, into an age of screens, and then get it all removed from them? Someone came along one day and simply flicked the power off. And that was the end of that civilization. They just imploded, as this civilization would do if anyone was to just do that simple thing to this civilization. Just turn the power off. What would people do? And what information would people have? What knowledge would they have that exists in the real world? What life skills would they have to be able to take care of themselves? You know, as I've often said, you know, humanity is being set up. We're being pushed into these cities, we're being moved into these massive, concentrated areas of population, we're being trained to be completely dependent upon a system which only supplies our needs for 3 days. Now, any supermarket you go to, the shelves only have 3 days' worth of food on them, and then the trucks come and they restock the shelves. And all the people within the cities are removed of any form of responsibility for themselves, any form of life skills. They become completely dependent upon a system, and they become completely dependent upon the internet and the virtual world for all of the knowledge that they have. So what happens when you take it away? What happens when you turn the power off and the trucks stop coming to the supermarkets and filling the shelves? And what happens to these people? I mean, none of them have any real life skills anymore. Not many of them even have the most basic understanding of what it means to be human. They may have higher education, but they don't know how to go and dig a garden or plant a tree or go fishing or catch their food or grow their food or whatever it is they eat. I mean, they don't know how to do any of this other basic stuff. They might be great with letters or numbers or something, but what does that mean as a human being? Now, what does any of this stuff we do mean as a human being? You know, and you look at the state that this civilization is in, and then you look at the technology that we are finding in relation to Tartaria, and you ask yourself how they fell, why they disappeared. And I would suggest we are seeing a practical example of how they disappeared unfolding right before our eyes in the world today. We're being set up. And really, the more you step back and look at it and consider that to be a possibility, the more it becomes obvious and the more it makes an awful lot of sense. And a lot of people can see this. I mean, a lot of people can see that there's something terribly wrong. They can see that we're being set up. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people who notice the things that I notice. But in the overall scheme of things, in the overall human condition, even with these realizations coming to people, and even with people seeing the problems that we have, they still look for saviors from an external source. They still wait for someone to come along to lead them to safety. You know, what we see with Q, the need for mass arrests and some big lawsuit. I mean, what's that going to do? If we have a lawsuit and we change the present system, we change the present government, well, what do? We put another government in place and we find ourselves in the same position. I mean, none of these things are the way out, folks. I mean, what lawsuit? What do you even want to launch a lawsuit for? You're launching a fictional lawsuit against a fictional system. I mean, the whole thing's fiction, folks. Nothing in it has anything to do with being human. But you see this everywhere. You see people saying, yes, I'm the knight on the white charger. I'm going to lead us all to safety. Just sit back, don't do anything, and follow me. You have people within the independent media saying, yeah, I'm taking on the deep state. I'm going to launch a lawsuit against these people. And the people out there in YouTube land and the people out there in the world watch all this stuff, and they sit there and they eat popcorn and they wait for some big change to happen, but it never comes. Yeah, but it's like they're watching a TV show. You know, it's what I call the spy novel version of reality. People are just waiting for the next chapter, and they sit there and they watch and they wait and they get all excited and they think something's going to happen. And no matter how much it never does, they still don't do anything themselves. They just sit there waiting and watching and waiting and watching and waiting for something to happen. But it just never does. And while they're waiting for it, all of this smart grid is rolling out around us, you know. And by the time people notice the smart grid, it's going to be too late. You know, by the time they put their arguments down, stop arguing over the petty details of all these things. Like all the people that are arguing with me over this Christchurch shooting and claiming, oh, Max is trying to prove it's real. No, I'm not. You know, I actually got quite excited when people told me it was all fake and we had evidence on the video. I thought, wow, this is great. We finally caught them with their pants down. So I got the video. I wanted to confirm all of these reports that people were putting out, and I realized that I can't confirm any of them because the video does not support any of these claims. And I'm not claiming it's real. I'm simply asking why the people who are claiming it's fake are making the claims they're making. Because all of it is detracting from the real evidence that the video shows us and the real action that we could actually take. And that's what sort of got me into it. I thought, well, hang on, if people are making these claims, why did they come out so quickly? What else is there on the video that they don't want us to look at? Why do they want us arguing about shell casings and whether there's enough blood and stuff? What is it that they're trying to distract us from? That's why I started looking at the video, and that's how I found all this other stuff. And this is a gift to us, but it's a gift that we don't use because we are so caught up in infighting over details which are irrelevant that just keep us detracted and distracted from the bigger picture. And it's like people see it as some sort of a contest. They have a position and they desperately want to defend it and they want to be right when really I just want to get to the truth. I want to get to the truth about all of these things because that's what it's about, folks. It's about the truth. It's not about all of this speculation and conjecture. It doesn't matter what anybody thinks. It matters what the truth is and how we can use the truth to our advantage to establish some freedom in the world. And that's what it's about. You know, and really that's what we should be focusing on rather than getting caught up in the details and arguing over details that we can't prove either way about all of these things. You know, we don't look at the bigger picture. We don't look at how the legislation will be used. And we don't direct our energy towards the liars and the criminals that are running this system and simply disconnect from it. You're not going to help by launching lawsuits against the government. The government's a fiction. It's just an idea. Pull your support from it. Stay home for a day. Imagine if the whole world stayed home for a day and didn't spend any money. I've been saying this for 10 years on the radio show, folks, calling for a day of non-compliance where the whole world just disconnects for a day and see what happens. You know, once people did that, I mean, it would send a shockwave around the world and would also inspire them to maybe want to do it for more than a day. You know, this is how we can make a difference, folks. There's not going to be any leaders come along. You know, we can make a difference by changing our perspective ourselves and disconnecting from this system. You know, you're waiting for lawsuits to be launched against the government and mass arrests to happen and Hillary Clinton to be taken to jail. While you're doing that, this smart grid's rolling out. All the people here in Australia who are waiting for the Privy Council to take action because the Australian government's all been put before the Privy Council and all this stuff, and the government's invalid and we're expecting all these lawsuits and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's fine, but while you're waiting for that, the smart grid is still rolling out in Darwin. Darwin is coming online as the first system of social crediting in Australia. And it's happening because while people are protesting all this stuff, they're still using their smartphones, they're still using their credit cards, they're still participating in this entire 5G cashless surveillance system which is being rolled out. And people give me flack for that as well. How could I watch your shows if I didn't have a cell phone, Max? Well, I don't know, folks. I don't have a cell phone and I watch other people's shows and I manage to put my own radio shows up on YouTube and I don't use a smartphone at all. So to me, the question is meaningless. Now, you've got computers and laptops and things at home. Why do you need to take this virtual world with you everywhere you go when you've got a real world around you that is falling into decline due to people's failure to participate in the world around them? That's the freaky thing, folks. You know, that's the freaky thing. And when you see it, when you see just how far we've been removed from reality and led into this virtual world, then you begin to see where the solution lies. Because none of this could come online. All these virtual fences they want to put up in Darwin, it wouldn't work if people didn't have smartphones. Throw your smartphones away, end of virtual fence. Pretty simple. But people won't do it because they're addicted to these things. I mean, it's unnerving, as I said earlier, folks, to go everywhere you go. Everywhere I go out, I see people with their faces glued to these screens. You know, I see this and I just wonder whether there's really any hope for us at all. I really do. And as I said, one of the big problems is that people can't see the way out because they're waiting for someone to lead them to safety. They can't see that the way out is within themselves. Because it doesn't matter what anybody leads you to. It doesn't matter what sort of a system comes along. It doesn't matter which president comes online. It doesn't matter which government is replaced by whichever government takes their place. You know, it doesn't matter if the Venus Project comes online. It doesn't matter if Ubuntu comes online. It doesn't matter if any of this stuff comes online, because if we haven't changed what's in our hearts and we haven't changed our moral compass, then we'll simply end up back where we are now. And that's the problem. People want to sit inside and just look at the situation in the world and stay undercover and hope it all goes away and wait for the newsletter that tells them that it's safe to go outside now. But it doesn't work like that, folks. You know, it'll never be safe to go outside until we change our moral compass. And if we change our moral compass and we refuse to comply with anything which causes us to step outside our moral compass, then we don't need a new system. We don't need a Venus Project. We don't need an Ubuntu. We don't need anything. All we need is for us to start acting within our moral compass. And if we do that, then the system that is here already will change around us because it won't have any other choice but to do so. Now, the only reason the system exists in its current form today is because we comply with it. We step outside our moral compass in order to abide by legislation which doesn't serve us or anybody else. You know, and that's the problem. That's the whole thing, folks. And if we haven't changed what's in our hearts, it doesn't matter what system comes along. We'll just end up back the way we are. I mean, that's the way it will work. And people want change, but they don't want to change. And they can't see that it doesn't matter what we create. It has to come from within. And then we don't have to create anything external. It will come about by its own accord, simply because we've changed our perspective of how we look at things and how we interact with things. That's all this fighting and argument and all this irrelevant stuff. It's just completely irrelevant. I've been so frustrated with this whole Christchurch thing over people arguing over the details and so desperately wanting to be right and claiming that it's fake and all this sort of stuff. I mean, and I don't want it to be right either way. I don't care what it is either way. I just want the real evidence to reveal itself so we can use the real evidence to bring this system down, because there's a lot of really good evidence in the video that has revealed itself. But you can't get any focus on it because people want to argue over all these speculative details and nobody can prove either way, which will tie us up in infighting for the next 20 years. And meanwhile, this whole smart grid just continues to roll out. That's the problem, folks. All the stuff that's going on underneath the surface while we're not looking. You know, we're arguing over details that we think are important, but they're not. What this is all about is freedom. Yeah, that's what it's about, and that's what it's always been about, and anything that gets in the way of that is simply a distraction. You know, anything that removes that focus, it's just a distraction, folks. It shouldn't be there, and it deserves no real attention. I mean, let's establish some freedom, and then we can figure out what's going on. We won't have to argue about it. Then we'll actually be free to find out. Won't that be novel? Yeah, and that's been one of the biggest obstacles that we face, folks, is the division, the lack of unity. That's something that I've been attempting to create ever since I began this radio show 10 years ago. Ever since I started being an activist many years ago, that's what I've been attempting to create. I've been getting many people actually saying, no, actually, you're not trying to create unity, Max. You're trying to create division due to the stance I've taken on the Christchurch shooting. But I'm not doing that, folks. I'm not trying to create division at all. I'm just trying to get to the truth. And if it can't be opened up for discussion and people can't explain what they're saying, well, what is that? You know, creating unity doesn't mean you go with the flow, no matter how false it is. You know, we need to have some sort of focus on the truth, because the truth is really what all this is about. I mean, truth and freedom, they go together, don't they? And I've just always been like that, folks. I've always been one to think for myself. I'm not someone to take a backward step to someone else's point of view or to jump on any bandwagon simply because it's the popular consensus. You know, we need unity, but we need some respect for people as well. And we need to be able to respect each other's ideas. We need to be able to open things up for discussion and realize what the real problem is, because the real problem is the system itself. And as I said, all these details that we get caught in and fighting over are irrelevant. They're all completely irrelevant. What is relevant is the current state of the human condition. That's what's relevant, and that's what needs to be addressed. All this other stuff is just noise. You know, sometimes it does get very tiring, this path, this road that we're on, the path of activism. It does become quite an exhausting path, but, well, it's a path that needs to be trodden. And with all these trials and tribulations that we face, folks, it's important not to give up. It's important to maintain the focus that we need, the focus on freedom, the light at the end of the tunnel, which is there if we can dig ourselves out of the tunnel enough. I mean, the tunnel seems to be growing. It does seem to be doing its best to cover us, but at the same time, you know, it's always darkest before the dawn, and there's always ways out of this situation. Like the success that I've been having with 5G, the success that other people have been having with 5G in the area here. There's all sorts of good news for people, and there's all sorts of good ideas that we can apply to the world. But ultimately, it's got to come down to this discovery of the self. I mean, that is the whole thing, folks. Don't get caught up niggling and arguing over details, and don't get caught up thinking these little things are important when the ultimate goal here is to change the human condition. The ultimate goal here is freedom, you know. The ultimate goal is to create some sort of a golden age, you know, the golden age that we deserve. Well, maybe that's a question. Do we deserve it? You know, how much do we deserve it if we're not prepared to take the responsibility for ourselves? Now, and even saying that, people say, oh, golden age now is becoming new age about it. Well, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, folks, heaven on earth, whatever you want to call it, the good place where we weren't dealing with any of this corruption anymore, that's where we want to go. Yeah, and we need to understand the real dilemma that we're in. Yeah, it's the fact that the world is run by criminals, and we keep looking towards this criminal system for a way out. We think we can enter within the criminal system and make change from within the criminal system. Maybe we can to some degree. But ultimately, this whole system is just an idea. Just an idea that some people had. It's just a people farm and this government system that they're using to manage each respective pen. You know, I've gone through this so many times on the show, folks. You know, this whole dilemma that we're in is simply due to our lack of self-responsibility, our lack of really wanting to call things for what they are, you know, our unwillingness to rock the boat, when we should. You know, get in the boat, folks, and rock it. That's what I came here to do. That's what I came to the world to do, to rock the boat. And I'm going to continue to rock the boat. I mean, that's what other people should do as well, because as soon as we are prepared to stop being politically correct about things and actually admit the truth, the simple truth, like I said, that the world is run by criminals, that's the way out. You know, just admitting that is the first step, you know, if people would just be at least prepared to admit that one basic truth to themselves, that would make all the difference. It really would. It would change their perspective about what life's about anyway. Certainly change their perspective of what their position in the social hierarchy is. Yeah, as I've said so many times, folks, we've got a multinational, multi-generational criminal cabal masquerading as government. It's racketeering, pure and simple. That's all this government system is from the ground up, and that's what it always has been. You know, and one of our biggest problems in trying to deal with it is that most of the population has Stockholm Syndrome. Now, even if people are looking for ways in the system, like, you know, joining politics or getting through the system that way to make change, again, it's usually because of Stockholm Syndrome. They think the system's real. You know, and even when they're entering into that system, they meet other politicians in there and they think, oh, wow, this is a nice guy. He's going to help me. But it never happens. Nothing ever changes. The whole system itself is corrupt from the ground up. And it's just an idea. That's the thing. It's just an idea. You know, if we didn't have government, we wouldn't have crime. We wouldn't have all these wars. And you might think that's completely absurd, you know, but I don't see it that way. You know, I see that the crime comes from the fact that people are kept in a state of scarcity. And that happens because of this government controlled money system, you know, which is really a privately run monetary system, but it's the government that controls that aspect of it as well. I mean, the whole thing's a scam, folks. You know, we've got a group of criminals that have maneuvered themselves in control of this world. Everybody who looks at them adores them and has Stockholm Syndrome and thinks that they're wonderful and that somehow they're going to fix the system. And that's what this whole Q thing is. You know, we're waiting for elements within the government to rescue us from government. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, folks. Government is the cause of the problem, and it always has been, and it always will be. And it's going to stay that way until we wake up to ourselves and wake up to the simple fact that we just don't need these people. Now, there's better ways to do all of this stuff, and if we could just maybe get some unity, put down all our differences and stop arguing over details and finer points and thinking we're right in all these things that we think are important that aren't, and we might find a way out of this mess. You know, it's just so simple, folks, and I'd love people to just put all their stuff down and just walk into the hills and stay there for a day. That would certainly make a great deal of change. Or just stay home for the day. Just disconnect from this system, folks. There's an enormous amount of power in the simplest of actions if people can really see these actions and how they will create a larger mosaic, you know, and see how they will create a larger picture. It may seem like a small thing, simply disconnecting from the system and staying home and not participating. But imagine if everybody did it. What an incredible thing that would be. What a wondrous change we would see in the world, and what an inspirational act that would be in the hearts of so many people. How much people would be inspired to be themselves from that point on and realize that, hey, we don't actually have to do any of this at all. It's just an idea. And, well, once again, we have reached that time of the week where we have now reached the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to bring you a show next week. I'll try. I'll see if I can get one recorded early in the week that I can bring you next Friday. But at the moment, I have 3 Cambo ceremonies during the week, plus I have a presentation to give later in the week, and I'm just not sure if I'm going to get a chance to actually record a show and create a video or anything like that. But I'll see what I can do. You never know. I'll try to get one out for you. Again, for people in Brisbane, I'll be speaking in Brisbane this week at the Salisbury Spiritual Centre. This is at 179 Lillian Road, Salisbury. That event is happening next Thursday, the 25th. That's Anzac Day. That's happening from 3 o'clock in the afternoon until 6 p.m. in the evening. Do come along to that if you're anywhere in the Brisbane area. It'd be nice to see you there. There's a good chance I'll also be doing one overseas gig this year in Philadelphia at an event called Anarchadelphia. And that is around about mid-September, I think. But I will get some more details on that as they come to hand, and I will share them with you as I get them. That's if this event actually does happen. There are some people attempting to organise it now, but there's a lot of logistics to go through to organise these events, so we'll just see how it goes. But if that does happen, I will definitely keep you informed before it does. And again, if you are in Brisbane, then do come along this Thursday at the Salisbury Spiritual Centre and say hi. That's going to be a good event anyway. And that's going to be with myself and Paul Seals and a friend of mine, Natalie, who's going to be talking about jungle medicines and trips to Peru and all sorts of interesting stuff like that. So do come along and check it out. And as always, thank you to all the people who send me so many kind emails. I can't answer all of the emails that people send me. I really am getting a lot of emails at the moment. A lot of people are sending me a lot of really long emails and kind of pouring their hearts out to me and asking me for advice. And I simply am not able to give advice to so many people, folks. I do what I can, but I cannot be there personally for everybody. I simply don't have the strength, folks, and I am sorry for people who are waiting for responses to some of these emails. I will get to them when I get a chance to get to them, but it is very difficult to keep on top of things. The rain definitely seems to have decided it's here to stay, though, folks, so that seems to be a good time to end the show anyway. But thank you to all the people who do send me the emails. Thank you, thank you, thank you to my Patreon supporters. I couldn't do any of this if it wasn't for you. And I'll very much try to get a show out for you next week, but if I don't, then I'll look forward to speaking to you the week after, but it will be one of the two. And whatever it is, I'll look forward to speaking to you when that happens. That is it for me now, folks. Please take very good care until then. In luck, Keshe.